With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Welcome to Podcart's Life is Like a Box of Records podcast. My name is Helena Rafai. Occasionally, we bring in special guests to talk about records that have soundtracked their lives so far. For rights reasons, music may be shorter than the original song. This week's guest is Edwin Organ. Hello, Edwin.
Hello.
How are you?
I'm not bad. How are you?
Yeah, not bad. It's the clocks have gone back. It's
Shit. Yeah, was that yesterday, right?
Yeah.
Because I felt like it went on forever.
Yeah.
For like genuinely, it got to 11 and I was like, oh, I've got so much work done. And then I looked at the clock thinking it to be 3. I went, no, it's fucking 11.
Yeah. It's bizarre. I've been up since 5:30 and I feel great.
Oh, wow.
So
that's quite good.
Yeah.
That's like Mark Wahlberg's like 4 a.m. start. You heard about that?
Oh, my God. Yeah. He's a weirdo, isn't he? You've been a machine this year.
Oh, thanks.
In terms of releasing tracks and EPs.
Yeah.
How's it all been? I mean, how have you felt about it all and the pace and the kind of the pressure of it?
I've been all right. Like, I put a lot of the pressure on myself because I kind of do the whole, I do everything. I like doing a lot of it. I don't like doing all of it, but I like it. So really it was my idea to be like, yeah, we'll put 3 EPs out and we'll use all these songs and it can all get going and I'll be hot off the press. But yeah, it's a classic 80-20 conundrum. Like 20% you put 80% of the work in and then the last 80% is really that. Oh, but it can boil down to not being a lot of fun, but no, it is fun. It is fun, yeah.
Yeah, well, we'll kind of talk about your releases and obviously how you got into music throughout this, but as some listeners may know, the way that we do the podcast is it's like life is a box of records. Life is like a box of records, rather, and you pick songs that have soundtracked your life so far.
Yeah.
Because it could all change. So you have, let's begin with Outkast.
Yeah.
And you've got a really good mix in this.
Hard to choose the tunes.
Like, yeah.
The first couple were easy, but then you get to the last ones and they're all albums for me. So it's difficult to pick.
Yeah. But no, it's a really good mix. So Outkast, how did you first come across this song? Well, what position did it have in your life?
I think I was like 10 when this song first came out and I heard it on 4th1 in the car and I had to try and write, I think I tried to write down as many lyrics as possible because they didn't tell you the name. Like I clipped the beginning where they're like, oh, we're going to play this. And then they ran like 2 songs back to back like radio does and you miss what it is. And this was before the times of Shazam. Like, oh man, I take that app for granted. Like you wouldn't believe. But yeah, so I gave it to my dad and he found out what it was and I got it. I think I got the clean version rather than the because I think I was only 10, so he probably realised there's some inappropriate words for a 10-year-old to have on that.
Dope boys in the Cadillac steel. Cats with a crown on your Cadillac feel. I make your wheels a steel stand steel. Like your DJ got killed. A fire marshal.
Get it down.
Time to go. Out cash royalty by design of logo. Wanna count it out loud?
93, 94, 95, 96.
Plus a dime to that 5. Hot like the perm on the back of your neck. Lift it in too long. Now you got cabbage patch. Silky. In the corners like a crowbar, oh so unique. Got the pedal to the floor, but the photo just creep. Exotic melodic melody, yep, we got it funky for the funk of it. And everybody want it. You make it with a dog on it.
You make it with a dog on it.
Music make the world go round. Where it go,
just don't know.
Like a marching band.
But Hey Ya was the album before, which yeah. I didn't realize. Like Speakerbox on Love Below, I think I'm saying that right. Yeah. And I only came back to that album like a few years ago. So I didn't realize that the influence that they had already, well, the influence that they were having and the prestige that they had already gained out of Atlanta. So I was a little 10-year-old boy hearing this tune. I was like, yeah, marching band. Woo. Yeah.
How old are you?
I'm 25.
Yeah. So you're a child. And I'm joking. But yeah, so that's quite a lot. Have you found, obviously, being you're 25 now, but I mean, the artists that you've picked and so on, is there anyone else that you've not picked that you have come into later and you've just discovered this kind of plethora of music that has just been become amazing for you?
I didn't put any J. Paul in there. J. Paul was pretty. When his album got leaked, which I only read on the big Reddit thread, which you can read about how someone essentially leaked it. Like, there's conspiracy theories that he did it, but no, it wasn't. It was someone else. And so that was a big one. But there's Arctic Monkeys' first album. Loved them. That was a big one for me. But now you think back on those times with kind of rose-tinted goggles. I don't know. I was always too young to even get into that, but it was definitely my brother that was putting me onto a lot of that stuff. Foles as well. Foles' first album was good. Like all that mathy stuff, and then later on, and when I was like 17, got a bunch of friends which were super into like math rock, like real math rock. Sorry, Foles, that first album isn't math rock, but it's close, you know, as close as you can get to be on Warner.
And that's quite kind of, I guess, for people that listen to your music, I often talk about stereotypes, and you kind of try and work out people's inspirations through their music. Your sound is really quite unique in ways, and you've got a real pristine production behind you as well. And I mean, I guess people like James Blake, who we'll talk about later, I can kind of see that in a certain respect. But what has really kind of shaped your music, do you think?
Definitely, but like production, I'm very heavy on production. I was always into music which was heavily like melody led, especially when we're coming up to things like Justice. Like, there's not really any discernible lyrics in any of that stuff, but that like really struck a chord with me. And now coming back to like writing music that's quite lyrically dense, I like to consider that like quite a lot when you come into it, because that's, people take a lot of information from lyrical content. But for me, when I was young and listening, it was all about mad textures and sounds and stuff. Like, really, I remember for a good period of time, I really wanted everything to sound like it was like your head was being wrapped in cotton wool. Like, if you could hear everything outside of it, like that muffling. I don't know why I was obsessed with that for ages. I think that was especially come down to like artists like Mount Kimby. I didn't put any Mount Kimby on this, but I fucking love Mount Kimby. They're great. Yeah, they are great. It's too hard to choose tracks for like six tracks, isn't it? You know, it's not a lot when you think about it. But I was into them before I was into really James Blake, because I think their first album was a lot more accessible than James Blake's first album, but I kind of just powered through to that extent. But yeah, it was textures. Big into textures and trying to like make something that is pleasing on headphones as well as like on a stereo.
Yeah.
Which I tried to do and I hope it works.
Obviously let's kind of move on to Justice and Let There Be Light. I mean, what made you pick this song as opposed to anything else that's been put out?
I think their first album was the best one. And shout out the music supervisor on like La Liga, Channel 5, like you know, like that was where I'd heard Phantom 2.
What is that?
It was a football advert. So La Liga is like the Italian Premier League, I think. Like, again, another thing that my brother found and gave to me, because we were both just like, what is that song? We need to find out what that song is. We'll be right back. But yeah, then like hearing Cross blew my mind, because I was always looking for electronic stuff when I was a kid, but the early 2000s were not really, it wasn't easy to ask your parents for, I want to find electronic music. And then, you know, that was, the internet wasn't really a thing back then. Like, you couldn't go and try and find out new music. So ended up like painstakingly going through loads of like I'm talking like early techno with a K, like stuff, and being like, nah, this isn't really, not like, you know, not like Detroit kind of techno. I'm talking like Amsterdam techno from like 2001. Like, it's kind of like, well, you know,
yeah,
you wouldn't play that in a club now, you wouldn't get that in Berghain. So it's kind of like trying to wade through that to get to the good stuff was always hard. And then Cross came out and I was like, this is exactly what I want, and I got obsessed with trying to replicate it, even though I got nowhere close.
Did they send you down a bit of a rabbit hole? Did you kind of start discovering?
Yeah, I got into the whole like actual electro house kind of thing, and digitalism and everything that was on like Kitsune, like all that kind of stuff, because that was big. That was a big thing which I was just far too young to really understand or get into. But yeah, and then he has bands like Crystal Castles, and like that was like, I don't, when you think about the other bands that are around it then, there was nothing really like their output at that time. But then there was Hot Chip, you know, you got stuff like Hot Chip, which really was great.
You have decided to release 3 EPs this year.
Yeah.
Why?
Great question. For a lot of these tunes, they definitely fit into a rabbit hole that I was going down, you know. I was definitely looking to I was trying to find about things how I could use more acoustic instruments and like real instruments rather than instruments within a laptop in a setting that I was comfortable with. I don't really regard myself as much of a player, even though I know some of my friends but like, oh no, well, you can play that. I was like, I literally know like 3 songs on each instrument and like that's it, you know. Like whenever I record, I'll just play the same I'll play what I need to record and over until I get it, and then I'm like, right, that's that done. If I need to go back and learn it for whatever reason, even though I never do because I sing all my songs, then
yeah.
I'm kind of like, yeah, I don't have to bother. But yeah, it was definitely a rabbit hole I was going down that I was open to exploring off the back of like Tame Impala second record, Unknown Mortal Orchestra, like all those sorts of things where, again, like especially the Unknown Mortal Orchestra's first record was wrap your head in cotton wool kind of thing. Like I was obsessed with tape, but I never really wanted to do tape because it's so like finite, like you need to print everything to it. And I always wanted to have the ability to go back and tweak whatever I was doing. However, that didn't make any sense. Like, it was a lot more free. And when I came back to these songs to finish them off, to get them ready to put out, like from like last year into this year, that I kind of just started just printing everything to what it should be, because I really should have went down that exploratory role of physical tape rather than trying to emulate it in the box, which ended up all sorts of computer problems. But, you know, I like to think I almost got there. I got a vibe I was going for, you know.
Yeah.
But it's, as with everything, it's very production-led. So that was where it went, trying to find melodies which stuck out to me. But just trying to explore something different than my earlier releases, because a lot of them were a lot more either sample-based or synth-based. So I wanted to try and merge that with real instruments.
Mm-hmm.
Taking over from me, I there's a day in your life you'd be happy for me. But all I see is wear in your eyes taking over from me.
A kind of strong theme throughout masculinity and toxic masculinity, and your quotes have been really funny as well when you're describing what the music is regarding. So just so for the listeners, what was the story behind the theme?
So a lot of it was down, essentially, the lyrical content. I found myself writing about things that I guess I'd only really come to realize that I used the lyrical process rather than this, like, songwriting and lyrical process are two different things for me. So, and then you meld them into this one thing and the song becomes something else, you know, you've got to work with the two parts. But the lyrical content was down to things that I found absurd, like trying to process things in the real world. And a lot of the time I found myself online or other men that you'd chat to in either work settings or social settings or things you'd overhear, things you'd see in the news, they're all just trying to like question what it meant to be a man and giving their definitive idea of what a man is. It's like, I know a man is this, a man is a provider, a man is like blah blah blah. I just found myself being like, I don't identify with like anything that yous are talking about. Like, realistically, I'm a straight white man, but I don't feel like you over there, angry, red-faced, straight white man, just like trying to proclaim whatever. I felt no kinship with that. And as long as you're not being a dick, like, I feel like whatever you're doing as a man is a man. You know, if you identify as a man, then you are a man. Like, that's fine. Like, it doesn't bother me. Like, I feel like you're just like, on all sides of the spectrum, on everything, like, as long as you're not being mean to people, like, that was a real turning point for me. It's just like, just stop being angry all the time and stop getting angry at things. Just like, take a step back and be like nicer. Like, everything can go so much smoother if we're just nice to each other and just try and understand things. Like,
it's really nice for me when people select certain artists to play that have filtered through my adulthood. So Owen Pallett, Final Fantasy.
Yeah.
And
it was hard to pick a record, like pick a tune off that record, because He Has a Good Home is the one. And oh man, yeah, there's a couple of tunes on that. When I think I was like 14 when I was like listening to that, and I hadn't really listened to anything else like it. Like, I think I'd seen a video on YouTube, like, it's No Cars Go cover that he does, like, just, like, filmed at the back of some room in, like, Toronto or something like that. And it was great. It's just him and his violin looping. I'd heard nothing like that. You hear the old guitar person looping, but nothing when it's, like, a kind of different organic instrument like that. Chose that song, I was just like, yeah, I listened to the whole album that day twice, so I didn't really know what I wanted to do. But that album has so many good production techniques on it. Like, it's very intimate but also very expansive in terms of like how he records things. I can't remember how I found that album, but there's definitely a track on there which was in a Vodafone advert, I remember, because I was listening to it and I remember seeing it on TV. Yeah, again, like the production techniques were great on that. Like, it's just a very, like, his delivery of his vocal harmonizing with himself rather than other people, which a lot of records before I'd only really heard people just doing it with others, where that if they were a man it'd be with a woman, or you know, vice versa, like that kind of thing. But yeah, there's so many great things about that album in specific that was felt like it had a very good flow to it.
Obviously, you're saying there about, you know, it's very much about him and how he works with himself and so on. And I guess you are quite similar, that you've kind of got to a point that you're quite set on how you work and your production and so on. Are you constantly kind of trying to evolve yourself, or do you feel that you're quite comfortable the way that you are just now?
I'm always writing, like always writing. I think this past week is the most time that I've taken off from writing. I think I had like 5 or 6 days where I didn't just sit down and try to make something. It's because it's real enjoyment for me is making things. Like I don't really get that same enjoyment out of anything else. I've never went into a studio to write an album or anything like that. I've never went into a studio to do anything. It's just me. I just do it with the facilities that I have at home. And I guess the I worry about a coherency between things, but I've been told by different friends and such that it's something that everyone goes through. They make things and they're always worried about it not sounding like similar or any sort of coherent lineage to things they've done before. So it's definitely something I think about, like that progress of evolution. But I think that happens on like an album to album basis, you know, like staying up to date with yourself as well as like times. Like the best albums are the albums you could listen to in 20 years time and it feels like a good solid, you know. Whereas you don't want to date, you don't want to do something that like everyone else ends up copying, unless you're the original OG creator and like, you know, you probably got some place in the cultural kind of lineage of everything going on. I can't remember the actual term. What's that? Cultural canon. That's the correct phrase. Okay. Yeah. In the cultural canon, which plenty of people have, you know, but yeah.
We are, so Bibio.
Yeah.
I don't know this person.
You don't know Bibio? No. You'll know his songs. You'll definitely know some of them. He's on Warp. He's like every year he puts out an album. He never plays live that I know of.
Is that the dream?
No, I like playing live. It's like a good cathartic thing. But I think like to do like a really good live show, you got to sink a good bit of money into it. And, you know, I ain't got that good bit of money to spend on that just yet. So he never plays live. And so all the stuff that I can find out about him and his playing is on YouTube. But he's a great guitar player. I presume he plays everything, probably even like the sax as well. That's on the odd bits and the odd flutes and stuff. But no, he's really, really good. So Jealous of the Roses, that track is... I think of it as being in two parts. Again, it's that tape thing. Like, he always bounces stuff to tape, I'm pretty sure, and finds, like, eroded tapes, like, tapes that no studio would use to, like, try and go over stuff. But the song is, like, in two halves that there's, like, a part A, and then part B is just, like, the same thing as part A, but with a slamming bass line underneath. And, like, if I could get every bass tone on a bass guitar to sound like that, I'd be pretty happy. Sit down and ask him like how he got that, because it's like hollow, but it's probably a hollow body bass. I'm throwing it out there. People probably don't care about this, but you know, it's probably a hollow body bass. But I can't figure it out for the life of me. But that's, yeah, there's something about those kind of like production techniques which are just like, that's what really grabs me by the shoulders and shakes me, you
do
know?
Do you actively kind of sit down and, because you spoke about production quite a lot through some of the tracks, and that seems to be a big inspiration, do you sit down and kind of study and for a while and try and figure things out?
Like if a song grabs me, that'll probably be to do with the production as well as like other parts. Like there's lots of great songs and that lots of great songs that I like, which I won't mention just to offend anyone who might ever think something, but like great songs that I like, and I think the production's good, but it's just not gnarly enough. Like it needs to, you need to turn up the crunch a little bit, yeah. You know, like that's what I liked about like Currents, like Tame Impala's latest record, Bar, the new one that he's teasing right now.
Yeah.
Like he just stepped everything up a level and it had the right amount of like grit in it to just glue everything together. Cause you get some really nice, like, so Bibio stuff is pretty funky. Like mm-hmm. kind of some of it skirts a fine line between like funk and then acoustic, like general acoustic, like almost English folk music in a way. Like it's really interesting. Like his recent record, Ribbons, was it's like half and half, but it's great. It's really, really great.
So Scotland and the industry up here and being part of the music community, what is it that you kind of enjoy about it, if there is anything?
If there's anything to enjoy about it. Nah, I quite like it. It's pretty good. Eh? Nah, yeah, like I think everyone can be in their own lane up here, really. Maybe to the detriment where people don't reach out because they feel like they're maybe overstepping their mark. Maybe I feel like that sometimes, like the intimidation of going up to someone who is in the same sphere as you, we don't really know, and you really like their music, to be like, oh hey, my name's so and so, I really like what you're doing. Like it can be quite intimidating to do that because we essentially put artists on a pedestal. I saw something today that was about how we have intrinsically linked artists and celebrity now. And like all artists have to be a celebrity to get things done. And I think that is that kind of like overarching thought is definitely a player in how people perceive artists. They don't perceive them as necessarily being like real people you could go up and have a conversation with, or, you know, that they might look mean, but it's just like, it's just a resting face, but really they're great. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But like loads of friendships for me have come out of that, of just like, you know, either me reaching out to people, other people reaching out to me, whether that be at gigs or you just bump into someone, you end up chatting to them. Like, you can make great connections up here, I think, in Scotland, where I don't know what that would be like in London. I don't really have any interest. Like, realistically, that is the two markets that I see in the country. Like, you've got Glasgow, which is the Scottish music country. Yeah. Sorry, everyone in Edinburgh. You're wasting your time in Edinburgh. You should move to Glasgow. And then you get London and that's it.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, people can talk about Manchester or Leeds or Bristol or all those other things and like they do it, but where everyone goes to get their record done is London. Like they go through that in some way, whether that's their lawyer, management, label, like it's all in London. So you've just got to try and make your own little enclave, which is fruitful in Glasgow, I would say.
Yeah. No, it's far, I guess, easier to kind of create yourself a platform up here and then for people to take notice down there. We'd spoken about James Blake and I can, like I said, I can certainly see that style channeling through, particularly the production aspects of his music. When did he first come onto your radar?
When the first album came out, I think it was 2011, I think. So that was the first year I was in uni. And that was like, it was mad good. Like there's a lot of space in his music, but there's also something which I'd never really like come to terms with before, especially in the genre of like post dubstep, which was definitely coined by everyone but people that were actually making what would be called post dubstep, like your Mount Kimbys and such. But it was a definite change from anything I'd ever heard before.
Let me see where she is gone. Let me see where she has gone.
Let me see where she has gone. Help me back soft with my changing love.
That way of blending jazz and like classical, like that song, that's like a straight up gospel like inspired song from the chord progressions. It's the only song I've ever wanted to play on piano ever, you know. And there's a complexity to what it does that, especially on that album, which I would like to endeavor to get towards. But I think he was like 26 when this album came out, maybe even younger. And now I'm approaching that age, I'm just like, fuck, it's going to be so long to like get to that stage. Like being able to play piano like that and sing is, and have that idea of composition, is, yeah, it's inspiring to say the least. But I pretty much bought the synth that he wrote this on, like when it was a Dave Smith Prophet 08 is what he used, and I bought the second generation of that as soon as I could. And I use that all the time, and it's,
but you, yeah, say that you wish you were at that stage, but I guess for someone like myself that listens to your music and a lot of other people, I think that I think you set yourself apart from a lot of the dross in that comes out, yeah, especially with the saturation of lad indie rock that we have to kind of put ourselves through on a daily basis. But I certainly hear that level of accomplishment in your music, and I'm not blowing smoke up your arse here. But I mean, do you think that's probably because you are obviously immersed in your own projects? And
yeah, it's definitely, it's a labor of love. Like that's like a lot of time, but I guess the way in which modern technology has really let people like myself make music is that you can record ideas and then go back and edit those ideas like very easily. Like if you record the audio data and the MIDI data, which is just the notes that you've played, then you can go back and put that over any synth ever. So it's like, and you can go back and tweak, you can make yourself sound like you can play a lot better than you can. but I like to, I guess from that record especially, it made me delve into jazz a lot more than I had done. It gave me a different appreciation.
Your final pick is Little Dragon. Yeah. This is a belter.
Oh, man, again, what a great album. So it's like, what one do you pick? But it was, yeah, this does... The synth line in this that starts out was so good. Yeah, that got my ear like near enough immediately. But this album's got a great kind of tone in terms of like the selection of a drum sound. Because from what I know about them, they're pretty much all four producers, you know? And is it Yumi Yuki? I forget her name because, again, like the lead singer, anyway, like she produces as well, sings, and they all do their different thing and produce at the same time. So when you get that in a band, it's not like you're just handing the production task to an outside source or something else. Like they definitely all live together in like Gothenburg in a big house with all of their like families when they put this, like, because I remember looking at YouTube videos at the same time this was out. So it's a very kind of collective idea, which is very inspiring. But the way they play with like reverbs and delays and just out there synths. Heard anything like that in a while, like even the record before, which I've, again, I forget what that's called. I could tell you what it looks like by the picture, but fuck knows. But that's what Spotify's ruined me in a way. It's giving me too much music to listen to, and I save it all in a playlist, and I just let one ring and then it comes up and I can fucking do it. But no, yeah, it's just like, it's got many, many good ideas in it. Like it played with stuff that I hadn't really heard anyone else do. Nothing really sounds like Little Dragon. Like I'm pretty sure they got a new record coming out soon, like on Ninja Tune, I think, or maybe it was, they definitely had an EP out, but man, it's great.
And So you've got your next EP coming out in November.
Yep.
And you are playing the Poetry Club on the 8th of December.
Yeah, into December.
What can people expect from your live show?
A lot of me singing and a lot of nice lights.
And you're solo now.
Solo, yeah, solo. Solo for the time being. I definitely want to bring a full band thing, but it's trying to deliver like a set that works for what you're trying to do right now, you know? So I thought that, especially when you got so many people doing, like, so many rappers, it's just like a rapper singing on stage and everyone's going mad for it. And there's someone maybe playing the decks, maybe not. Maybe it's just that dude on their own or women, whatever. Like, it doesn't really matter. But they get away with it. They don't get away with it. They perform what they are doing. They are there to rap or sing or whatever it is. It's like, you're not going to start pulling that away from them because they're not got a guitar or a keyboard strapped to their body, you know? So I went down that idea of being like, how could I make something which is interesting for people to look at and be in the room for, which probably lends my advantage given that there's some very difficult things to try and articulate, like, on the record live. Like, it's, yeah, that's a real headache. Like, if anyone's thinking about, like, making some electronic styled music and then playing it live, good luck to you. And if you need any advice, email me, because I'll tell you all the things I did that took far too long to do.
After the last EP's out,
I'll just not put any music out for a while. I'm just gonna push these songs because, like, that's a lot of tracks.
Yeah,
some people don't put this many tracks in at a time, but I like writing all the time. And I, like, someone said to me, do you ever feel like you get like a dry spell, like a creative kind of rut? And it's like, not really. Like, it's what would make me depressed is that if I just stopped getting enjoyment out of it.
Yeah.
Like there's so many things you can take influence from, like, you know, compositionally or in terms of production. So using that as like a guide to try and make new things is always pretty easy for me. So I'm gonna keep writing. I'm just not gonna put any stuff for a bit and try and do some more live shows, get more people into that. Want to do some stuff with some more like virtuality/virtual effects, try and bring out music in a different way other than just like, here's my new Spotify release, hello.
Yeah.
Because that can take a lot out of people.
Yeah.
Especially when it's like slog at times trying to get traction on streaming sites, etc., you know, because it's in the hands of the few, not the many. So.
Yeah. Yeah.
But yeah, we'll see. We'll see.
Well, thank you so much for sitting down. I wish you all the best. And so the EP's out on the 22nd of November.
Mm-hmm.
And your Poetry Club show is on the 8th of December.
Yeah, which is bound to be a banger. So please come.
I can't wait for it, actually.
Yeah, it'll be good.
Because I'm going to use that as my kind of lead-in to taking time off.
Oh, yeah. Big Christmas, yeah, kind of. Yeah, okay.
Yeah.
6 weeks of Christmas.
Yeah, that fuck the music industry. Exactly. Okay, thanks so much.
No worries, a pleasure.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.